Hello and welcome to the Lincoln County Gardener, a weekly segment broadcast on KYAQ Newport, where the Lincoln County Master Gardeners bring you weekly conversations on a variety of gardening topics. Master Gardeners are local community members trained in scientifically based gardening techniques by Oregon State University Extension Service, so we'll be sharing research-based and locally relevant information. My name is Ross, I'm a Lincoln County Master Gardener, and I'll be your host this week. Joining me today once again is Tom Green, a co-coordinator for the Waldport Demonstration Garden. Today we'll be taking a deeper dive into the special exhibitions that'll be the centerpieces of the demo garden over the coming growing season. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So what are these projects going to be?
We're doing something different this year at all of the demonstration gardens. Instead of apprentices doing projects, we're trying to hew more towards the intent of the demonstration garden by creating exhibits that we can both experiment with and try to educate the public, which is the core of our mission, is to disseminate best practices out to the community. And so this year we identified, Karita and I, my co-lead, identified three main exhibits that we would like to work on this year. One is composting. We currently have sort of a three bin setup where the idea typically is to mix your greens and your browns in one bin and then raise the gate and move it over as it starts to cure or cook and then keep adding to that. And we didn't do that. We kept everything in one of the three different bins and actually produced some very nice compost that we have spread out through some of the beds. But we'd like to be a little bit more intentional about how we're recycling our yard waste. And so we have one apprentice who is going to do some research on sort of best practices around composting. We'll create some signage that will help explain to the public the process and the science behind it and gear it more towards a very systematic, intentional process rather than, I just trimmed a bunch of stuff, I'm going to throw it in the bin. Which works, you know, things decompose and you get some, hopefully some good stuff. So that's the composting one. One of the tricks is it's not a huge garden, so we're not producing a lot of yard waste. So that'll be one of the things that we're hoping to explore is how we can go about increasing the volume so that we have a more reliable source. One of the conversations I had early on with the apprentice who's going to be working that is building a relationship with the community around things like Halloween. So what do people do with their pumpkins
when
they're done?
Absolutely.
Bring them down the garden. I'd like to find a way to throw them long distance into the compost. Exploding pumpkins are just fun.
They are.
But we, you know, it's going to be messy and somebody's going to have to clean that up. So, so we're thinking about maybe finding other ways to augment what we produce in the garden.
Compost is nice because you can really do it as controlled or as uncontrolled as you want. And sort of you can experiment with what does this look like if we take a really systematic approach
exactly.
to compost.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, and think about it because, you know, we don't want to, you don't want to throw plants that are diseased
yes.
or fungus or something on them in there. We have to be really mindful in the fall when we take down what's been growing so that we're not dumping a whole bunch of tomatoes into the compost because the next year when you spread that, you'll have tomatoes popping up everywhere. Not altogether a bad thing, but maybe not what you want.
Yes.
So, yeah, we spent a lot of time stripping all those little cherry tomatoes off that had dried up over the summer in there. That'll be a good exhibit, I think. Anybody can do it if you have a little bit of space. There are people who like to use the bins at home so they can do more hot composting, which will kill some of those pathogens or things that might get in the soil. So there's lots of ways to do that, you know, to keep out animals. Rats like compost as much as humans. So, you know, you don't want to invite those guys in.
So what is the next exhibit that you're planning?
Another exhibit we're planning is water-wise gardening as a sort of a broad concept. I mean, the idea is that our environment's changing. It's getting hotter. We've moved in terms of the hardiness zone from the USDA from an 8B several years ago, so that now we're 9A. In that time, the mean temperature has increased 5 degrees in our area. So there really are some things that are happening that make us more conscious of the temperature as well as water.
Mm-hmm. It's been dry.
Very much related, yeah, exactly. So with the WaterWise Gardening, one of the projects is going to be a xeriscape. Traditionally thought of as succulents and cacti and some other really drought-tolerant plants. So I think that'll be one focus of it. And then we'll do maybe two comparison beds, one that uses a very low but measured amount of water, maybe a gallon a week at the most. Waldport gets a lot warmer than some other places. And then a third bed that uses the same plants. I'm thinking probably a tomato, maybe a zucchini, maybe some beans. And then in another bed that's a completely dry garden, we'll water it when we initially put the plants in, but then after that, there's no water. No matter what happens, no water.
Interesting.
So we'll be able to compare, you know, did they really do okay? I mean, tomatoes have deep root systems, so, you know, they may be pretty resilient to some of the warmer, drier conditions, but we'll compare the same variety of tomato in both gardens, see if a little bit of water makes much difference, and if it doesn't, that's great information.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably combine that with the third exhibit we're going to do, which is vertical gardening. A couple of years ago, one of our apprentices built a vertical garden. They anchored 2 4x4s and between them placed some boxes and planted those so that they're kind of at the height of someone who maybe has some mobility issues that can sit in one place and reach everything. She planted some edible flowers and some herbs and a variety of things. So we'll probably rework that design a bit. And then we have another apprentice who wants to do a vertical sensory garden, which I think would be way cool. Lincoln City has a sensory garden, which is very nice, but we're looking at doing this vertically. There's lots of designs for vertical gardens. When I lived in Southern California, I used that a lot in my yard with succulents. I built towers with succulents. I built a living wall. So there's a lot of different designs that we can explore. And then plant those with plants that smell and feel and maybe even taste in a way that will stimulate the senses. The current vertical garden uses a nice wicking system.
Clever.
Where there are gallon milk jugs filled with water on the side and then a special kind of wick that runs along the plant so it just wicks into the soil and there's no maintenance, essentially. I'm not sure how we'll do the sensory garden on a vertical garden. And I think we'll also try a vertical xeriscape garden too. We've got some space on the ground where we can go up and we want to use that space, you know, as much as we can. Know that there was a very nice succulent garden at the South Beach garden a few years ago with some very nice rock formations. And actually that was the first garden I visited when I got interested in the garden program. It really sold me on the idea. So we're thinking maybe some other structures that will house some succulents or some very drought tolerant plants.
Mm-hmm. Does that tie into the wicking system as well? Is there any reduction in water usage?
I think with the wicking system, there clearly is. Yeah, there's no runoff. And the main advantage would be somebody with maybe mobility issues is not going to have to lug a watering can.
Absolutely.
And do that. One of the ones I had built before had a rain catchment system on it that would funnel the water that came in down into where the plants were growing. So, you know, there's some other clever ideas to reduce the amount of physical effort it takes to garden. Patio gardens, you know, there's all kinds of ways, instead of just digging in the ground and tilling the soil and hauling in big bags of things like we did for the raised beds.
Mm-hmm.
So something that's, you know, a minimal amount of effort, maximum amount of yield.
Yeah. What is the water system like at the Waldport Demo Garden?
A challenge. That was one of the things that maybe wasn't completely thought through when the garden was built. But I think it was probably also because we hadn't developed the relationships that we need to do that. So currently what we have are several 250-gallon tanks that are on a catchment system from the one shed that has gutters and downspouts. So we have that, and we have a small solar panel that runs a water pump. So we can use that in the garden. It needs some work. The solar panel may not be large enough. The pump may not be large enough. So we'll work on that this year too. When the tanks run dry, we haul a hose. The community college is great to us. We're allowed to use their water source outside. It's in a lockbox. But we're dragging hoses 150 feet to get to the outside of the college and attach the hoses. And then we can use that to water. The very first year I was there, we were just filling water cans.
Wow.
And hauling around, which was very labor intensive, because we're doing it, you know, once a week at least. You know, the garden's probably 75 feet in length, so it's still going to haul some hoses.
It seems like the challenges and logistics of water, having not as much as you'd like, having not as easy access to it, is really one of the themes of the garden this year.
Has to be. Uh-huh. Yeah, it should be. You know, I know when I built my greenhouse, I was away from any source of water, mm-hmm. so I don't have water in the greenhouse. I do have now a long hose that during the summer I'll just park outside so I can go inside and water things. Otherwise, I'm filling watering cans from 50-gallon rain barrels that I have, which are working right now, but you know, when it's full of plants that are thirsty, it's a lot of labor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge consideration. You know, as much as siding the garden, which in one part we're lucky because there's really no overhanging trees, there's lots of sun, it's well situated on the site, so we get a maximum amount of sun. Wind is a challenge at Waldport as well. Last year, the front gate blew in, attached pretty well with hinges, but it just knocked it down, ripped it out.
Yeah.
So those kinds of siding issues are ones that people need to think about, as we do in the garden.
I'm excited to see how things go for you with all those many experiments over the course of this next growing season.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It'll be fun.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining me today.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
Let's shift to discussing some seasonal gardening tips. Today, let's focus on what to do with bulbs after they've bloomed, since hyacinths, daffodils, and tulips are well underway or even finishing up their blooming periods based on where you live. It's totally fine to deadhead or remove the flower heads once they're done blooming. And in fact, this can be helpful when trying to get bulbs to bloom again next year, since removing the spent flowers prevents the plant from putting effort into creating seeds. However, it's important that you leave the leaves of flowering bulb plants, and ideally the flower stems as well, even after the plant is done blooming, as photosynthesis happening in the leaves and stem is how the plants acquire the energy they will need to bloom again next year. Some people like to braid, fold, or otherwise alter the leaves, but this interferes with the leaves' ability to photosynthesize, so ideally refrain from doing so. The best time to fertilize bulbs is when they first push through the soil in early spring, but you can also fertilize after blooms stop but before the foliage dies back as well, and don't fertilize at both opportunities. A 5-10-5 ratio fertilizer will work well for blooming bulbs. In general, tulips do not come back as reliably as other blooming bulbs, especially flashy hybrids, and so people often just replace these every fall. You can remove the leaves from the bulbs once they have browned and died back and crisped up and are no longer photosynthesizing. That's it for our program this week, but tune in for future broadcasts on KYAQ Newport. You can find out how to contact us with all your gardening questions on our website, www.orcoastmga.org, where we'll also be putting these episodes after they air if you need another listen. We'd also love to hear your subject suggestions for future episodes of the Lincoln County Gardener. This broadcast is created by the Lincoln County Master Gardener Association, who work in collaboration with the Oregon State University Extension Services. Until next time, happy gardening!